Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
92% because of a bike?
Not just bikes. We also make treadmills and rowers.
Oh, let me guess, for elite athletes only, right?
Nope. It doesn't matter if you're an avid exerciser or new to working out. Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try Peloton bikes, tread, or row risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by GetOutOfTheMess.com. Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello and welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain. I am your host, personal empowerment coach, Paul Coliani. I am here to answer your questions on your relationships and your life. I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem, and empower you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything I talk about on this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your mental or physical health. All right, I want to talk about something that almost all of us do, and what that is when we have a problem that we are upset about in our life. A lot of us will explain this problem in so many ways with so many different ties to so many other things that we almost lose sight of what the actual problem is. And what I mean by that is, let's just say that, well, actually, I can tell you this. I used to live in Florida. And my car got broken into 4 times over the 15 years that I lived in Florida. And so I can look back at that now and go, okay, karma. When I was younger, I used to steal things. You know, I wasn't a career criminal or anything, but I could look at that and go, okay, this is what's happening here. Some spiritual cosmic thing is coming back and biting me in the butt, which is fine. Coming back to what I was talking about, speaking of focus, I can explain to you like one of those times, it was like 4 a.m. and I went out, or I heard my alarm going off and I went out and saw that my window had been broken, the small window, and that a good 90% of my stuff was gone. And so I called the police. The police arrived really fast in some unmarked vehicle, which made me feel better because they were patrolling the neighborhoods and that was great. And I explained to them what had happened. And also someone else was there too. 4 a.m., this kid dressed in all black, and he just came up and walked up to me and said, hey, how's it going? What's going on? And I think about that now and I go, wait, this kid, he probably broke into my car. He's just returning to the scene of the crime. But because he's walking around the neighborhood, he wants to make me think that I can trust him and he's out for my best interest or whatever. Anyway, you know, you see how I'm telling this story? There's all kinds of little facets and little directions I can take with it. And as I tell the story, these thoughts come to mind. Oh, yeah, this happened. And oh, yeah, it was an unmarked car. And oh, yeah, this kid came up, which actually was relevant. But I could tell you more like, oh, I remember he's wearing a gold chain. I remember it was memorable. And I remember that, you know, my girlfriend woke up and she was wondering what was happening. And I have all these other, like I said, little facets to the story that can help me lose focus on what the problem is. So if someone came to you or came to me and said, you know, my car got broken into last night, I would be like, oh, okay, you know, what happened? And they would tell me the story. My goal as a coach would be like, okay, so how are you doing with this today? What are you feeling? What emotions are you going through today? And I would be very specific because I want to know what's happening in the present. I don't want to know maybe what you went through and who was involved and all this other stuff. I mean, there would be questions about that. But I really, my focus and what I want your focus to be when you think about something that upsets you is how is it affecting you today? Because when you focus on the emotion, when you focus on how it's affecting you today and start to eliminate the, and I don't mean this offensively, but let's just, you know, I'm doing this too. We all do this to an extent. Let's take out the drama. Let's take out the poor me and I went through this and this happened and that happened. I'm going to step outside the drama and I'm going to ask myself, how do I feel about this now? And I'll come up with, an answer. I mean, I'm going to use this car getting broken into, which I'm completely over, but let's just pretend I'm there now. I'm angry. All right. I've got an emotion. Okay. I'm focused on my anger. Now I can work with something. Now I have anger to work with. Well, I'm angry because this person, here I am getting into the story. I'm angry because this person did something to me. Okay. Let's bring it back to myself. How do I feel about that? Well, I'm angry. Yes, I know. Why are you angry? Because this person did this to me. He violated me. He got into my personal space, which as a coach, you know, I'm coaching myself. I would ask myself, okay, so how does that make you feel having someone violate your personal space? I might use anger again. I might say violated, disrespected, unsafe. Some other words will come up. But you can see I keep bringing it back to me. How does that affect me? What about that affects me? How is that bad? You know, these are all the drill down questions. If you've been listening for a while, I talk about drilling down into how things affect you instead of staying focused on the story and the drama and everything else that has to do with it. Let's bring it back. Let's take responsibility for how we feel in the moment about that thing, because that is where we are today. Because if somebody came to me and said, you know, I feel this way and I want to stop feeling this way, I'd be like, great, we can work with that. But if somebody came to me and said, you know, my car got broken into a few weeks ago and I've been angry ever since, it might tell me that they're still angry. If they said yes, and I'm still angry about it today, that gives us something to work with. But they, if they said, you know, after my car got broken into, you know, I lost my job and my girlfriend left me and there was a hurricane and my windows broke and all this other stuff happened. Even though all of that may be related and could be relevant, it's good to know where you are today with it. When you sit with it today, imagining that that stuff, not that it didn't happen, but since yesterday is not here anymore, that today is the most important moment to focus on, you know, being in that present moment. What do I feel today? And you might sit with it and go, well, you know, my car got broken into a couple weeks ago, which it didn't, just an example. And I was very angry on day one. And I was slightly angry on day two. And today, I feel unsafe. I feel violated. So there's things I can work with there. So I'm going somewhere with this. I want you to identify the emotions that you're having about the situation, you know, because what's going to happen is that I'm going to be maybe angry at the person who broke into my car. I'm angry at that person. Okay, that's fine. But what's the emotion? Anger. Great. Now we have something to work with. So what do I mean? There is actually a process that I created that is a questioning process for you so that you can do something with the emotion so that it can be transformed into a way out of how you feel today. I mean, there are times that you want closure for something. Like, I'm going to stay up late every night and watch out the window and wait for that person to come back. That might be your journey to get closure, to catch the person who did this. But I'm not talking about that. That is something you can choose to do or not. I'm talking about when you're in that funky space, that negative emotion space that you don't like being in. if you want to get out of it, try this questioning process. I should name it something like getting out of the story and into the solution, or getting out of the upset towards someone else. It's really all about getting closure in yourself and getting to a new level in yourself so that you can do something with the energy that has built up inside of you. What I mean by that is sometimes you're upset towards someone else and you're just waiting for them to do something so you won't be upset anymore. And when you go through life like that, always being upset at someone else, then you're always upset, because who really changes for you? It's rare. It can happen. I mean, there are people that apologize and say, I'm so sorry. But when I use this example, is that person who broke into my car ever going to seek me out and apologize to me? Are they ever going to get caught? And if they don't get caught, does that keep me angry for the rest of my life? Does it dissipate? Does it ever disappear? I want to do something with these emotions that come up. I want you to be able to take an emotion that you feel or an emotional space that you're in and be able to do something with it if you don't like it. So let's go through these questions and see if they help you. What I'd like you to do, if you want to play along, is think of someone that causes you to feel upset in some way. And this could be in a relationship that you're in, a family situation that you're in, someone at work. Think of someone that causes you to feel upset in some way. You got it? Play along if you want. If not, then just stay up with me and we'll get through this. The next step is to describe a specific situation that upsets you with this person. Now, when you describe it, make sure you come up with the emotion. Remember how I came up with anger? Make sure you come up with the emotion that you feel. However, now here's the caveat. You must limit your description to a very basic cause and effect. Don't say because after you explain what happened, and don't give any reason to why you feel the way you do. Let me give you an example. When I wake up in the morning, she makes herself breakfast, but doesn't make me breakfast. That makes me feel, what's the emotion? Anger. That makes me feel annoyed. That makes me feel frustrated. And that's all you say. You don't say, because, you know, she should think about me. She's so selfish. You don't go into the story. You just say, when I wake up in the morning, she makes herself breakfast and she doesn't make me breakfast. So we just labeled the trigger, right? That's the cause. It's not really what causes our emotion. Our reaction causes our emotion. But what we're going to do is call that the cause of our emotion, because we want a cause and effect equation here. Now we want to finish the cause and effect equation here by saying, that makes me feel what emotion? That makes me feel frustrated. So now I have the cause and the effect. It's just a simple A leads to B. So when you describe the specific situation that upsets you with this person, focus on the emotion and limit your description to a very basic cause and effect. Don't say because, and don't give any reason why you feel the way you do. Here's another example of that. When I say I love you to him, and he says, thank you, that makes me feel what emotion? Here's another one. When my wife goes to lunch with him, it makes me feel what emotion? And then you leave it at that. You don't say, because, you know, she did this or he should do that, or you don't go into the story. Just make it a basic cause and effect. I want you to really focus on that basic statement. All right? You might want to write it down or think about it, but that's step two. Step three is to narrow down. If you came up with several emotions, narrow down to the most powerful emotion that came up for you. We only want to work with one for now. So if it's between anger, frustration, rage, despair, disgust, whatever came up for you, what is the most powerful? And if you have several that are on the same level, just pick one, because we only want to work with one for now. So get that one in your mind. Step four is to ask yourself one of the following questions. Depending on your emotion, one question will work better than the other. So try to discover which one works best for you. Let's just say that we're working with anger. Here are one of the two questions that you can ask yourself. If I had to be this emotion at myself for my behavior in this situation, I'd be this emotion because why? That's a little confusing. Let me put in this emotion and we'll work with it. If I had to be angry at myself for my behavior in this situation, I'd be angry because blank, fill in the blank. Or if your emotion that came up was anxiety, you can say, if I had to be this emotion, anxious about something I do in this situation, I'd be anxious because I what? So there's two sentences. Depending on the emotion, you'll just have to fit in the one that works for you. If I had to be this emotion at myself for my behavior in this situation, I'd be this emotion because blank. Or if I had to be this emotion about something I do in this situation, I'd be this emotion because I blank. So what we're doing here is we're taking responsibility for our emotion, aren't we? We are now refocusing, talking about focus, right? Refocusing on what's most important, what's most relevant and prevalent about the upset, about the situation. Sure, we can be upset at someone else. Like, I could be upset at the guy who broke into my car. But if I want to get over this upset, if I want to stop feeling this upset, if I want to stop feeling maybe anger, then what I need to do is take responsibility for how I feel and work with it. Because that person's not going to change, or likely not going to change. That person's likely not going to apologize. That person's likely not going to get caught in my situation. That person's likely not going to change their ways or give me my stuff back or give me money or anything like that. That person will probably never change. And so I can either hold on to my upset toward this person or I can work with it. How do you work with it? You take responsibility for it. This is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm going through. If I chose not to be angry at that person and I had to be angry at myself for my behavior in this situation, I'd be angry because, what do you come up with? I might come up with, because I was stupid enough to leave thousands of dollars worth of equipment in my car and expected not to get broken into. I mean, whether that's true or not, what this does is it forces you to focus on what you can do and could have done differently. Now, you may have some bad feelings that come up because of that, but that's okay, because what we're doing is we're taking our focus off of things that we can't control and putting it on things we can control. So another one might be like, let's use the breakfast example. She wakes up, makes herself breakfast, and then she's done and I wake up and there's no breakfast for me. And let's just say I have some sort of upset going on, something negative that I feel toward her. This questioning works best and probably specifically for feelings that you have toward someone else. I feel angry toward that person. I feel resentment toward that person. I feel disgust toward that person. When you feel something towards someone else, if you feel like rejected or unworthy or lonely, this doesn't necessarily work for that. I'll talk about that on another show, but if you feel something towards someone else, this is how this works. So let's just say that I felt frustrated that she didn't make me breakfast. It's always frustrating. She does this every morning. There's my story, right? She does this every morning. It frustrates me. So I'm going to use one of these questions. If I had to be frustrated at myself for my behavior in this situation, I'd be frustrated because, So that's forcing me to question what I do, what my role in this situation is that causes me to be frustrated. Well, I wake up every morning expecting her to make me breakfast. That's something I do that frustrates me, because if I didn't wake up expecting it, then maybe I wouldn't get frustrated. And then here's my story coming up again. Yeah, but she should make me breakfast. Okay. And when she doesn't, how do I feel? Let's bring it back to the emotion. I feel angry. All right. So I could take that anger out on her, or I could bring it back and go, well, is there anything else I feel? Yeah, I feel hurt. I feel rejected. Ah, now we have something going on inside ourselves that, yes, they could be a part of, but it really involves us. Because when we feel hurt and rejected, for example, then we have something that we can address with them. Instead of being angry, because this is where this is leading, instead of being angry toward them, we can come back and address it in us with them. So instead of saying, you never make me breakfast, you just think of yourself. That's where it can go. We can come back and say, you know, when you don't make me breakfast, I feel like you don't love me. I feel like you just think of yourself, and that really hurts me. This is where we get into those I feel statements. This doesn't work with every single person on earth, because there are some people that do this on purpose, that want to make you feel bad, and there's emotionally abusive situations and things like that. But for most, quote, normal relationships, a statement like that can be effective. I feel hurt when you don't make me breakfast. It really makes me think that you don't think of me at all. And in a somewhat healthy relationship or healthier relationship, your partner's going to say, oh my God, I didn't know I was hurting you. I'm so sorry. You know, let's talk about this. Or maybe they'll say, I don't have time and I'm so sorry. Maybe I can make it up to you in another way. You know, there can be a productive conversation out of that instead of a defensive conversation that comes out of, you never make me breakfast. You never care. So this is what this questioning is all about. And there is a final question to help you get through this as well. And it depends on what question worked for you best. Like the two questions that you ask yourself, depending on the emotion, is if I had to be this emotion at myself for my behavior in this situation, I'd be this emotion because what? The second question is if I had to be this emotion about something I do in this situation, I'd be this emotion because. So it just depends on the word you come up with. If I had to be disgusted at myself for my behavior in this situation, I'd be disgusted because. Or if I had to be disgusted about something I do in this situation, I'd be disgusted because. And then you fill in the blank. And all of these are going to be on the my website, theoverwhelmedbrain.com. You can find this post dated for February 18th, 2018, and I'll have this line of questioning so you can actually read it instead of doing it in your head while you're driving or flying a plane or something that is a little tough to focus on two things at once. But the fifth and final question to really bring home the focus on how you can maybe feel a little bit differently in the situation so that you can get out of the upset toward the person is this. What can I do differently so that I am not this emotion at myself? And we kind of addressed that already in number four, but I wanted to make it an official step. So what can I do differently so that I am not this emotion at myself? Or what can I do differently so that I am not this emotion about something I do? So in the case of, you know, a person making the breakfast and she doesn't make it for you, what can I do differently so that I am not frustrated at myself? Well, I can stop expecting it. That's not easy because there's other emotions coming up for me. Yeah, but if I expect it over and over again, then I'm setting myself up for failure. I'm setting myself up for disappointment. If I know she's never going to do it, then I have to accept that and come up with a different game plan or share with her that I'm upset and it hurts and I feel rejected. But I need to address it in a different way instead of coming at the person and putting them on the defense really quick. So this is all about getting out of your upset towards someone else. And what I'm going to do is just summarize this really quick. One, think of someone that causes you to feel upset in a certain way. Two, describe a specific situation that upsets you with this person, making sure you come up with the emotion. However, limit your description to a very basic cause and effect. Don't say because or give any reason why you feel the way you do. An example of that is when I wake up in the morning, she makes herself breakfast, but doesn't make me breakfast. That makes me feel blank. There's no drama. There's no story. It's just a simple A leads to B statement. Number three is select the most powerful emotion that comes up for you. So if there are several, let's work with one. Number four is ask yourself one of the following questions. If I had to be this emotion at myself for my behavior in this situation, I'd be this emotion because what? Or if I had to be this emotion about something I do in this situation, I'd be this emotion because I what? And number five is, what can I do differently so that I am not this emotion at myself? Or what can I do differently so that I am not this emotion about something I do? What this really does is it helps you stop focusing on what happened and helps you focus on what is happening today inside you, in your space, in your environment. It gets you out of the drama and gets you out of the story, and it looks directly at cause and effect. That's critical thinking 101 right there. Let's look directly at cause and effect. What causes me to feel this emotion? When this person does this, it causes me to feel this emotion. Great. We have a formula. Now we can work with the emotion. And the reason I wanted to talk about this today is because I do get a lot of emails that have a lot of associated stories attached to what they're dealing with today. Like, for example, if somebody wrote to me and said, I'm just so angry all the time, that'd be great. We can work with anger. Let's talk about that. But if they said, I'm so angry all the time because for the past 14 years, my husband did this and he made me angry at that time. And one time he did this and one time he did that. And another time he did this and another time he did this and another time he did this. I get those and absolutely fine. I actually want you to be able to stream this thought out, express it. I want you to be able to get that out of your system. Perfect. But in the end, I want to know exactly what's happening to you now. And this is something important for you to understand. What am I dealing with today? When I think about her, I feel blank. When I think about that situation, I feel blank. When she does this, when he does that, I feel blank. And then that blank is the emotion. And when you have the emotion, great. This tells you what state you're in today. And it also takes you out. I mean, it really does. It takes you out of where your brain tends to go. It takes you out of connecting all the dots that led up to today. When you can take out all those dot connecting stories that you can relay easily over and over again, and just focus on when this person does this, I feel blank. Or when I think about how this person has treated me, I feel blank. At least that's happening today. There may be several things that have happened in the past, but you're focused on how you feel today, which gives you something that you can do about it today. You may not be able to resolve it today. You may not be able to heal from it and get past it. But let's focus on the most important aspect of it, which isn't their behavior, which is important, but it is your reaction to their behavior, your emotion about their behavior, about something that's going on or something they did. All right, now I am taking responsibility. I'm owning this emotion. I'm putting myself on the side of the equation that I take responsibility for my behavior, my role. Because when I'm on this side of the equation, that is some level of control. When I'm on their side of the equation, wanting them to change, wanting them to do something else, I lose that control and I stay stuck. I stay without closure. I wait for them to change and they never change. Or if they do change, it took away 5 years, 10 years, 20 years of my life waiting for them. I'd rather have you resolve what's going on in you so that when they do behavior that is upsetting, you can share with them what's going on in you. And if they aren't empathetic, if they don't care, if they don't respond in a healthy way, then you bring it back. Geez, when they responded that way, that made me feel even more angry. That made me feel even more upset. That made me realize what? That made me realize that maybe they're only in it for their best interest. They don't have my best interest in mind. They don't care. You know, you might have these realizations as you take more and more responsibility for you. And these realizations don't always come up when you're so focused on someone else. They only come up when you start focusing on what's happening in you. And because your focus has changed back on you, you can take the next step that is right for you. You can make the next decision that benefits you. You may not know what that decision is yet, or it may be a decision that you fear making because there are consequences. And if that's the case, then you have to, you know, figure out what the best course of action is and maybe talk to your friends or trusted people. But bring it back so that you at least can control the aspects that you can control. And just assume that if they never change, if they never apologize, if they never make amends, then what do you need to do for you? That's what this is all about. What do you need to do for you? It's a neat process. I hope it helps you. And when we come back, we're going to talk about feeding someone else's dysfunction, something we probably don't want to do and something we want to be very aware of, which is why it's helpful to have a lot of focus on your behavior and what you do in your role in every situation. Be right back. Let me tell you about getoutofthemess.com. I talk about Asha every now and then. She's an independent associate for Legal Shield, and she will help you connect with a service if you're in the US or Canada. This service is really cool. I pay about 24. I think we pay 24 a month on the family plan. I think we're on the family plan. And what it does is it connects you with a law firm, and this law firm will answer your questions. I mean, this is for some phenomenally low rate, as opposed to like $250 an hour to ask a lawyer questions, take up a lawyer's time. This is a specific law firm that's assigned to you in your state or province that you can call anytime and just ask questions. And it's very, very handy. I've used them several times. My girlfriend has used them a multitude of times. It just becomes a great way to keep yourself protected. And, you know, with so many things nowadays where people just become litigious for no reason, or seemingly no reason. I think the reason's money. I mean, they just become litigious because they want something from you. They want to get money out of you or out of the system or whatever. It's nice to have someone on your side, someone that maybe you wouldn't have been able to afford to have at your beck and call whenever you needed them. That's what this does for you. Whether you've got some sort of legal thing coming up, or you've been in a car accident, you get speeding tickets, you get a letter from some other attorney, you're being evicted. I mean, there's all kinds of things that we just run into in life, and sometimes they're out of our control. You know, talking about what we can control in our life, like in the last segment, this helps you gain some control and not be so at the whim of anyone who wants to bully you or threaten you with a lawsuit or legal action. It's really handy. I would recommend you at least check it out. Go to getoutofthemess.com and you'll be forwarded to Asha's website. And if you want to talk to her directly, she can just tell you all about the service and if it's going to work for you. If you have a specific situation in mind coming up, or you just want to be able to have that protection like we do, because, you know, when you have your own business, it's kind of nice to have that protection. Give her a call, 678-355-8777, and she'll tell you all about it. That's Asha with getoutofthemess.com. Check it out. All right, welcome back. I'm going to talk about how you might feed someone else's dysfunction. You know, a dysfunctional relationship is one that doesn't function well. It's one where there are challenges. You know, you're going through everyday challenges that seem a little harder than they should be. Dysfunctions from one side or the other or both can tend to be codependent of one another. You know that term, right? Codependency. And when you feed someone's dysfunction and they in turn feed yours, then you have a very challenging relationship that doesn't usually work well for both people, but usually for one person especially. I see this a lot, the giver and taker. There's the one person who gives and gives and gives, and the other person takes and takes and takes. You see this a lot in addictive personalities in relationships. One person is the addict and the other person is the enabler. That happens a lot. That's a codependent relationship that keeps feeding each other's dysfunction. Sort of like my mom fed my stepfather's dysfunction for 40 plus years by cleaning up his messes, by paying his bills, by, you know, when he fell asleep with alcohol in his hand, she would take the glass out of his hand instead of letting it spill all over him. You know, these are the things that we do to remove accountability. When you remove accountability from someone, then they never learn. It's just like, okay, you're never going to learn. You're never going to feel what it's like to have your drink spill all over you, even though you pass out with it every night, because you'll never know that I removed it and protected you from that. I mean, that's a minor example, and not necessarily that that person was doing anything wrong. But, you know, there are times when, like, my stepfather would smash glass. You know, he'd smash his glass in the kitchen or in the living room, and glass would shatter everywhere because he would be so angry. And that left my mom cleaning up the shards, which means he would never step in that glass himself and hurt himself and have any accountability for it. And I don't think he would have learned anyway, but that's an example of removing accountability. It's like, well, I can smash as many glasses as I want. It'll always get cleaned up. And when you have that kind of enabler that lives with you, then you can be as dysfunctional as you want to be. And that's a problem. You know, if you've ever been in that type of relationship where you have enabled someone else's dysfunction, the relationship's a major challenge. It is not healthy. It is not typically happy. It's just challenging. It's difficult. So this segment's a little bit about feeding someone else's dysfunction. And it's related to an episode I did a while back. I don't even know the name of it, but somebody wrote in and I addressed their question on the air. And I wrote back to them and said, hey, I addressed your question on the air. Just wanted to let you know. Hope things are going great. Well, she wrote back, I think it's a she, and she said, I just listened. Thank you so much. I wanted to let you know that largely thanks to you and helping me realize what was going on, I cut all ties with my ex. I stopped replying because I knew it was feeding him, there's that word, and I stopped feeling bad for him. Then I met someone amazing, like the universe gave me a prize for finally cutting him out of my life, and I can see what a healthy, happy relationship is supposed to be like, and I've never been happier. So thank you so much for replying, and thank you for all the advice you give. You make such a difference in people's lives. You're welcome. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'll just call you Joanne. And Joanne's previous message was so different. It was so different. And you can tell she came from this space of, like she said, feeding him. She was feeding because she was replying to him, and he would feed off those replies. He would bait her. You know, what some people will do is bait you into an emotional state, a way of being, a way of feeling, because they know your buttons, they know your weaknesses, they know your vulnerabilities, and that is how they keep their supply of control. For example, some people want you to feel bad for them so that you'll be in a space of empathy and compassion. Then they make that empathy and compassion your vulnerability and exploit you in some way. The problem with that is that empathy and compassion are very powerful states to be in, because that just shows how human you are and how kind you are and what you're willing to do to show others kindness and care for them. It's a very powerful place, a very loving place to be. But as powerful as that is inside of you, it can be snatched away from you when someone puts you in that space to make you less conscious or aware of the possible harm that they could inflict on you. And that's the dichotomy, is that you can be compassionate and kind and empathetic, and an unscrupulous person can use that against you. They can see that and go, ah, so this person likes to be empathetic and compassionate. I'm going to make them feel empathetic and compassionate for me by telling them a sob story. Now, this is tricky and it's a gray area because, you know, we all have sob stories. We all have something that happened in our past that we're sad about. And so this is a normal thing that all of us do. However, the unscrupulous person, especially emotionally abusive people, will tell their story in order to get you into that compassionate, loving, kind place, so that they have some level of control over you. So it's so subtle. You know, that's the gray area. It's like, how do I tell the difference? Well, there are ways, and I'm going to talk about it in a moment, but I want you to be aware that's what happens, is that you can have needs and desires that an unscrupulous person will take advantage of. Oh, this person has a need for love and affection. What I'm going to do is love bomb them and show them how affectionate I can be. I mean, this typically happens when you first start getting to know someone when you're like dating. I'm going to show them how loving and affectionate I can be. Called love bombing. So they shower you with affection and compliments, and they do gift bombing. They give you all kinds of gifts, and they just fulfill your need. They go over the top fulfilling your needs. And when they do that, there can be a tactic involved there. The unscrupulous person will use that tactic to gain the advantage of you becoming attached to them because your needs are becoming fulfilled. But this does happen all the time with unscrupulous people. So the questions are, can you and should you be compassionate and aware at the same time? Can you be empathetic and on your guard at the same time? Should you be? Is that something that we need to start doing now because there are unscrupulous people out there? Emotionally abusive people know that most people can't be both at once. They know that you can't be compassionate and on your guard, or empathetic and on your guard at the same time. They know you can't be because you become vulnerable, you become soft and receptive. And when you're in that space, it's harder to be on your guard. It's harder to be hypersensitive. It's harder to be hyper-aware. Now, if you could develop that, which you can, this is something I've worked on, when you develop your compassion and your awareness at the same time, then you don't fall into a trap if it's set. Because you can still be aware and catch the red flags as they appear. The tricky part is, if you have deep desires and deep needs that have gone unfulfilled for a long time, and the unscrupulous person is aware of those, that's when trouble can start. That's when they can start taking advantage of you. An emotionally abusive person will transform your strength into a weakness. Now, compassion is strength. When you have compassion, when you have empathy, that is so strong. When you're nurturing and receptive, that's powerful. When you're vulnerable, that's huge emotional strength. That's at the top. When you can be vulnerable, that's such a high level of strength, is showing your vulnerability. You know, because, you know, a lot of men, they're taught, you know, you shouldn't cry. Crying is for babies or wussies, they'll say. And we're taught wrong. I just believe we're taught wrong. We need to be able to access our emotions. We have them for a reason. Anyone of us needs to access our emotions. So if we're ever taught to hide those or conceal those, it can make us less receptive and nurturing and kind and compassionate and caring, and especially vulnerable. And if we can't be vulnerable, then it might be hard for others to be connected to us. They might say that we're emotionally withdrawn or emotionally disconnected. And I realize it's hard for some people to connect with their emotions. There might be some pain there. There might be some fear there. There might be no reference for an emotional connection at all. So to become vulnerable means to really allow the emotions that you're having to start showing up. Those that are in touch with their feminine side typically are better at that than those who aren't. If you have a good balance of both, then you can actually achieve what I'm saying here, which is the compassionate and aware at the same time, and empathetic and on your guard at the same time. That's why balance can be very helpful as far as the mix of masculine and feminine, because the emotionally abusive person will take advantage of that. They will transform your strengths into weaknesses. However, you can protect yourself by knowing what you're feeding them. It does take a conscious awareness and also a non-reactive state to see things unfold in a way that you can identify instead of get lost in. And what I mean by that is that you are aware of the game being played. You won't know the first time it happens because maybe you've never experienced it, but the second and third and fourth time you start picking it up. It's a game that some people, unscrupulous people, will play to get you more comfortable with them, but not just comfortable. It's almost like falling in love fast. This is like a big warning sign for me. I mean, I know it happens. People fall in love fast all the time. But when someone else is meeting your needs over the top and you fall for them really fast, that to me is like, whoa, 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 you need to slow down, because maybe they're taking advantage of you knowing that what your desires are, what your needs are. And if they come up with a way to meet those needs, then you're going to fall for them fast because they're meeting all those needs. And then over a month or two, you start seeing a different side of them. But you've fallen for them so fast and you're so deeply intertwined with them that it's harder to get out because they met your needs, which means they have it in them, at least that's your belief, and no one has ever done that before, so you want more of that. So you stay to try to get more of that, even though they've now taken it away probably forever, because maybe the unscrupulous person wanted to meet those needs for you at first, but it might have been contrived. It might have been a way to gain control of you so that you'll stay with them and feed their dysfunction. Some people might call that a narcissistic supply if they're a narcissist. It could be an emotionally abusive supply if they're an emotional abuser. If they're a manipulator, it could be the manipulator supply. Whatever makes you respond, react, fall for their game. If you play their game and they keep control, which is usually their game, if they can stay in control and you are the reactive one and they are the one holding the reins all the time because you're always reacting, then they are winning the game. They are playing it so well that you can't now get out of it because you're sucked into it. This can happen. And people like that, the ones that meet your needs and really suck you in and make you feel warm and loved and comforted, if they're unscrupulous, the game for them will be the wave of being nice and then not being nice. And then when they're not nice, they'll find a way to blame you. They'll find a way to make you responsible, and then they'll be nice again, fulfilling those needs. They know that if you're starting to get angry or upset or thinking about leaving, they'll get nice again to fulfill those needs, and your demands will be met. Your desires, your needs, your hopes, your dreams will start to be met through their words, not necessarily their actions, but their words. And then they'll go down the hill again and start being mean to you again, or whatever they're doing, manipulative, and causing you to feel bad about yourself, causing you not to trust your own decisions, pointing out how reactive and sensitive you're being, and they play the game to keep you hooked, to keep luring you into a trap. Like in the immortal words of my girlfriend about her ex, she said, "Whenever he was being nice to me, I knew he was about to throw a brick." And that's just so true. I mean, this is what happens with unscrupulous people, is that they lure you in, they hook you on, and they keep dragging you along. Now, with the person who wrote me this letter, she figured it out. She figured out what was bait, what was the draw to this person, and stopped being hooked by that bait, stopped falling for his trap. And this is really good to know for you. If you know someone who sets you up for the trap, you need to know what the bait is. You need to know what they're setting up so that you don't fall for it. One of the things you need to start doing is, if you're not doing it already, is become super aware of your own hopes and needs so that you don't get laser focused on getting those met. Because you'll have emotional demands, for lack of a better word, that can get supplied by someone. And if that someone is unscrupulous, you might miss the big picture that they may be luring you into a trap. So that's why it's important to become very aware of what you need most. Like, what do you always need in a relationship? Like, I've always need close connection and wanting to be with them all the time, at least in the past. This is something I look at as my clinginess. I wanted to be always clingy with them. I always wanted to be with them. They couldn't go out on their own. This is my past relationships. But this is what my dysfunction was, is that I was so clingy that they couldn't even go out with their friends. They couldn't enjoy a night with their mom or dad because I would become jealous or possessive or something that made them realize, wow, I'm just so clingy all the time. So I realized this in myself after I started healing, is that I have this clingy nature and possessive nature. And I wanted to understand that about myself, because if someone came into my life that fulfilled that need, always wanted to be close to me, that meant that I was developing a quick attachment, falling in love fast. And that certainly could set me up for failure if the person ended up being unscrupulous. Fortunately, in my life, I haven't met unscrupulous women. I was usually more unscrupulous, at least from an emotionally abusive standpoint. But I've realized this in any relationship, when you have deeper unfulfilled needs that you bring into the relationship. If someone's unscrupulous and they find out what those needs are, they could essentially use those to make you fall for them fast, and everything seems perfect and wonderful and they're the best thing ever. And then suddenly they change and you're like, where did they go? What happened to that person I knew the first couple months of our relationship? It's because they knew what needs to fulfill, causing the attachment. And then when you were attached, they didn't fulfill those needs anymore, causing you to want them more, seeking to fulfill those needs again. And that's what that cycle is. And the problem with that is that you end up fulfilling their needs and being under their control, being subservient to their wants and desires, and they stop fulfilling your needs. And unscrupulous people will trickle that supply to you every now and then, so you get those emotional demands that you have fulfilled, but in small artificial ways. But they're just enough to keep trolling you along, unfortunately. So again, it's very important to become aware of what you really need most. What needs, what are your strongest desires when you first get into a relationship? What are the ones you are looking to fulfill most? They're not just neutral needs that we all have. These are the ones that are deeper than maybe some other people that you know, or than you think they should be, or maybe you think they're normal. I used to think wanting to be with my girlfriend 24 hours a day was normal. And it turns out that my dysfunction was that constant clinginess and wanting to be around them and wanting to know where they were all the time and who they were talking to. That I can see as a dysfunction today. But back then, I wasn't thinking about what are my strongest needs. If I really wrote down what I needed most, that would be an interesting exercise for you, is to write down what do you really need most. Not necessarily what you value most, but what you need most. I mean, they could be one and the same, but it's good to know what those are inside of you so that you don't get lured into a trap by someone that doesn't have your best interest in mind. Now, when you know what your needs are, here's the hard part. You don't want to get trapped by someone unscrupulous, but the hard part may be giving up your quest to get those needs met. Because for people with low self-worth and low self-esteem, that's one of the hardest steps to take because you want to fulfill those needs so badly. And when someone comes along and fulfills your self-worth, makes you feel worthy, makes you feel important, makes you feel significant and loved, and those were your strongest desires and needs, that's what you want. You want that so bad. But you're looking for the over-the-top fulfilling of those needs. If you love a gift on your birthday and they give you 3 gifts a week during your dating, that's over the top. In my opinion, it's over the top. If you love compliments and they give you a compliment every day and every time they see you and you look beautiful and it's always complimenting, that's over the top, in my opinion. I just think you have to be aware of these over the top, especially during the beginning of a relationship, meeting of needs, to let you know that maybe there's too much of that going on. And then you ask yourself, if this were a relationship that was just starting out, is this normal? I mean, it may be normal for you. Maybe you've had great relationships like that. But from what I've seen, more often than not, if there's any excess of need meeting, that can tend to lead to some sort of dysfunction later or very unhappy, unhealthy relationship later. You know, sometimes we have needs that are just so powerful that we're willing to believe things that aren't true. Got to be aware of this because, like my stepfather, he really believed that someone in some third world country was a multimillionaire and wanted to send him money. I mean, these are the internet scams that we see all the time. He wants to believe that these emails are true. He'll reply to these emails. He'll see these scams come into his inbox. And he'll even say, no, I know what a scam is, and then get another scam from someone who wants him to cash a check and then send them money, and then he finds out the check is bad. And he keeps falling for these, like, over and over again. At least from the stories I hear, he spent, I don't know, I can't even count, tens of thousands of dollars on internet scams because he wants to believe there's a way to get rich quick. He wants to believe it so bad that he'll undermine his own rational thinking for the chance that it could be true. This is what we do. We tend to undermine our own rational logic, our own rational thought, in hopes that it could be true. And when you do that in a relationship, you're setting yourself up for such emotional pain. I'm not saying it'll always happen, but if you undermine rational thought and get attached to all that emotional need meeting from the other person, again, over the top meeting of needs, then you might be blind to what could be happening instead. It's just the receptivity and the awareness at the same time to start developing that so that you can be aware while you're being receptive. You can be loving while you're being observant. You develop them both at the same time, so it's not all one-sided. So I want you to think about that. I want you to think about your strongest needs and desires in relationships or any part of life, because the stronger they are, the more you wear them around. You're walking around with these needs and desires, and when they're so strong, people recognize them, and an unscrupulous person will recognize them and then take advantage of them. I mean, this is why some people can sell you things that aren't real. I mean, you want to believe something is so true, but it's not. I see ads on Craigslist and other places for like a 2008 BMW, $4,000. And you look at it and you go, wow, this is in really good shape. Wow, it only has 76,000 miles. Wow. And you see it and you go, wow, this is an awesome deal. I want to get this deal. You know, if you're into BMWs, and you're like, I can afford that. But what I've seen happen there is that bait and switch. They get you excited, believing that you'll think it's true. And then when you contact them, they either want to sell you a different car, or they just want to collect your information to get an email address, or they're doing something else that's very unscrupulous, very unethical. And then you could get scammed, because we want to believe so badly. Let's just say that money's been low, so we want to believe that we found the best deal we could possibly find, which can happen. But what are your strongest desires and strongest needs that you bring into a situation or a relationship? And just be aware that if those are being fulfilled, you are more vulnerable. But you can be vulnerable and aware at the same time. You can be vulnerable and on your guard at the same time. It is possible. So the bottom line is, it's not always the best idea to be so open and expressive towards people that you give away who you are when you first get to know them. Like, you tell them everything. I actually tend to do this, but I have the ability to be aware enough of where things are going that I can back up and I can honor myself and honor my boundaries if I see any red flags. But sometimes we don't. Sometimes, you know, even the best of us can get duped, where a need or several needs are fulfilled by someone, whether in dating, whether in friendship, whether in any situation, where if someone wants to take advantage of you, they're going to find out what your needs are and make you believe that they can fulfill those needs, and may even contrive ways to fulfill those needs so that you'll feel more comfortable around them. It's very sneaky. I don't like it. But I want you to be aware of it, just in case you're in the dating scene, just in case you're one of those people that gets exploited or taken advantage of or scammed. Try to be more reserved around people when you've had a history of bad relationships or bad business deals or whatever, so that they show themselves first instead of you showing yourself. It doesn't always happen, because some people are very clever, but if you're reserved, you're not exposing all your needs right away, you're keeping a low profile, then they have to show up as themselves more and more. At least we hope that's how it goes. And learning who they are, you find out that they are either good and have your best interest in mind, or not. And then you can start to open up a little bit more and a little bit more. But if you dive in with both feet and become completely trusting because they meet all those deep desires and needs, you can become attached and committed really fast to someone who may not have your best interest in mind. Just a good thing to be aware of. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back with some thank yous, and I'll close the show. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I'd like to thank Asha with GetOutOfTheMess.com. If you want to know if this legal insurance will work for you, visit the website getoutofthemess.com or give Asha a call at 678-355-8777. She'll give you the lowdown on the service and hook you up if you're interested. And I want to thank the patron members for their contributions to the show. Every patron member we have is a valuable member of our inner sanctum here. And I appreciate every one of you. Thank you so much for your support. And of course, I hope you're getting value from the episodes that are coming out, the workbooks, and especially the email coaching for those of you on that program. I appreciate you, patron members. Thank you so much. And anyone else who's using the Amazon link at theoverwhelmedbrain.com, that is another way to help support the show if you find value. And of course, those of you who donate, I reach out to you directly, and I appreciate you so much. Thanks again. And I want to mention the Mean Workbook for those of you who might need it. It's an assessment and healing guide for difficult relationships. You remember, I talked about how in a relationship, an unscrupulous partner can hook you in by over-meeting your needs. And that's when you can become deeply attached and emotionally connected really fast. And then they take away your supply. And at that moment, you become their supply. They end up controlling and manipulating you, and you start questioning yourself and losing trust in your own decisions and intuition. They can drag you along knowing that if you feel bad, you'll reach out to them to make yourself feel good again. It's their way of keeping the control. Your deepest needs can work against you, so I want you to be aware of what those needs are and make sure you're not in a relationship that is taking advantage of those needs. That's why I created the Mean Workbook, a 200-point assessment and evaluation for manipulative and emotionally abusive relationships. If you'd like to know if you're in one of those, get the workbook at loveandabuse.com. After your purchase, you can join a private peer support group on Facebook if you want, where you can connect with others going through the same thing. You don't have to go it alone. Get your relationship evaluation today at loveandabuse.com. And finally, thank you to Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. To close the show, I've got an interesting comment that I checked out on my website. I just found it. It was from 2015. That's like 3 years ago. For those of you listening 10 years from now. The comment was from someone who had a very important question, and I never saw it. It was listed on, I don't know, I think my contact page. It was like a page that I never looked at comments on. So I apologize to this person for never seeing this comment and never addressing it. So like I always say, every time I receive a message, I like to address it. So this message I got 3 years ago, I'm going to read it real quickly and I'll tell you my thoughts on it. This person says, I'm having trouble with my wife and my life. After reading a few of your articles, I've realized that I am someone who doesn't honor my boundaries. I continue to feel disrespected by many people and I don't know what to do about it. To compound my problems, my wife is continually an irrational thinker with anxiety. I can't have a discussion with her containing a differing opinion without it devolving into a fight. She wants to have another child, and I'm concerned about the health of our relationship. She doesn't think there's a problem and feels as though her opinion is not being validated. She told me she didn't want to strong-arm me into this decision, and the conversation ended with me being strong-armed into agreeing with her. She has on occasion been emotionally abusive to me. We are currently seeing the same therapist, not at the same time, and this therapist feels strongly that my wife can change. I do acknowledge that she has improved and that the process will be slow. What I am not sure is what can I do in the interim to keep my sanity? All right, thank you. 3 years ago, person who wrote this, I am so sorry I didn't get to it. But let's talk about this. So you're having trouble with personal boundaries? Absolutely. I've created episodes on personal boundaries. That is one thing that once you start building inside of you, it's like one of the first chapters in my book too, actually starting to honor yourself and show up being that authentic person that you want to be and telling people what the line is when they cross it and when they've gone too far, just to show that you care about you. You care about yourself. So I think it's vital that you work on that. Listen to those episodes, read the articles that I've written on personal boundaries, and yes, start that process as soon as possible because your whole life changes after that. I tested this. I've tested this many times where when I honored myself, even though I feared the consequences, things always worked out better than I expected. I always planned for the worst. I was like, okay, I'm going to get punched in the face when I honor myself, but you know what? I want to stay in alignment with my integrity and alignment with my values. So I need to do this. And like I said, every time I've tested this, it's worked out better than I had ever expected. And it reinforced my confidence in myself. It reinforced the ability to show up the way I really wanted to show up instead of the way I thought that I should show up for others, like being a people pleaser and stuff like that. So that's, yes, definitely start with that. Your question has to do with what do I do in the meantime as this relationship develops? Well, it's been 3 years. I mean, you'll have to tell me if this has gotten better or not. But if this were 3 years ago, what I would say is that you either go all in or all out. Now, this may be a foolhardy advice. I know it because I don't know your entire situation. And who's to say that she won't get worse? But my belief is that you're either in it and you're all in it or you're out of there. So what that means is that you make a commitment. You make a commitment to be with her, to help her through this. If she knows there's an issue and she wants your support through this issue, then you have to be there. Even during her breakdowns, even the times that she's telling you that she hates you. I mean, this might be pushing it far, but you know, if you're in it, you're in it. You commit, you go for it, and you accept everything that comes along with it. You just know that she is going to have her moments. And as long as you see that upward trend, that progress, then things, you know, have forward momentum. They get better and better. But if the chart shows a downward trend and things are progressively getting worse, that's when you make another decision. So this kind of contradicts, but let's go there. Let's contradict ourselves. Let's just say that you committed. I'm all in. Everything I'm going to do, I'm doing it for you. I'm supporting us. I'm supporting you. I'm supporting this relationship. Everything we do, we're going to do together. And I'm with you, hon, all the way. And then 6 months, a year, 2 years, maybe 3 years, maybe you're there now. You see that downward trend and nothing has changed or things are getting worse. Then you might have to make a new commitment because you're keeping up your end of the bargain. I know that's kind of unfair because somebody might be going through some stuff and it might take a long time, but you do need to assess how far you're willing to go. So the initial commitment is you going, I'm all in. I'm here for you. Let's go through this. Let's get, you know, better together. Let's heal through this together. But maybe in the back of your mind, you can say, you know what? If things don't change in a year or they get worse, am I still committed? I don't normally like to plant that seed ahead of time, but I do like to just, you know, this is what we were talking about earlier, having that compassion and awareness at the same time, having that love, but observation at the same time, being kind yet sensitive, being kind yet observant, being caring, being nurturing, yet conscious of behavior that is diminishing or destroying you even. Those are harsh words, but let's just say that you're with someone and the more you're with them, the more you disappear. The more you are chipped away, your happiness slowly fades away because you believe you have to stay committed. I'm all about committing 100%. I'm going to play full on. I'm with you the whole way. But when they're not doing what they need to do to continue this process, you might have to make a different commitment. Now, that doesn't mean you automatically leave. It could mean we need to take a different course of action. We need to reevaluate where this is going. I think it's important to make commitments and keep those commitments. And I think it's just as important to reevaluate when you are disappearing, when your relationship is disintegrating and things aren't getting better and you are losing yourself. It's time to reevaluate. So I realize there are some contradictions in what I say, but in the space of today, I can commit to you today, and I will commit to you as long as I can. And you might even say, I'm with you to the end. But what is the end? Where do you define that? How do you define that? Is the end where you allow someone to be so toxic in your life that you're willing to give yourself up completely and go down with the ship with them? These are tough. You know, I realize there are some people that need a lot of help, need a lot of healing, and you might want to be there because you're a compassionate, nurturing person, but don't ever go down with the ship where things are just getting worse and worse and worse. Look at those trends, reevaluate, talk about it, and figure out if anything can be done. But if the ship never stops listing, then maybe time apart is what needs to happen. And maybe that's what starts the healing. That's another thing that we sometimes don't consider, is that time apart where we don't influence each other and don't enable each other's dysfunctions, don't give them the supply they need for their dysfunctional demand. Maybe by us being out of the equation is what changes things for the better for both of you. So I want to thank you for writing that comment back in 2015. I hope things are better for you now. I would love to hear from you if you still listen to the show and hear what happened. And if I hear from you, I'll share it with the world and maybe we can address something else, or maybe everything's great. But if things aren't so great or they could be better, no matter what's happening in your life, I want you to keep an open mind so that you can step into your power, and this will help you be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.